Welcome back to Mormon Expression Voices. This is Katrine, and today our special guest is Colleen. Welcome, Colleen.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, and Colleen is here because she wanted to talk about her past with the church and how she views things today. So, Colleen, where did you grow up and where did Mormonism come into play early in your life?
I grew up just in a small town in Utah. I was born in the church, but my mom was a convert. She came from California to Utah to ski and met my dad here. And he was like, you know, her mountain man that she fell in love with and got him to, I don't think he was too into the church, but, you know, she kind of got him to take her to the temple and everything. So I was born in the covenant, and I have an older brother and two little sisters.
So you'd say you had a normal Mormon, strong Mormon upbringing, how were you raised?
Not too strong. My mom actually passed away when I was 5. She fell asleep at the wheel and got in a car accident. That's one of my earliest memories. I was just so young, and my little sisters were like 18 months and I guess 3.
Oh, wow.
Or 2. I don't know. Yeah, really young. And so my older brother would have been 6.
Oh, wow. That's really sad.
So, yeah, and but my dad is just like the most amazing guy in the world, and he raised us all, and I'm sure I can't even imagine having to do that myself, but he did a great job. And, you know, so we grew up like going to a babysitter every day after school. Like, we had just kind of a babysitter and until I was in 5th grade, and then we were just home alone, which was pretty crazy. So we didn't have very much structure. My dad was really lenient with us, and the church wasn't huge in our house, in our home. We would pray at meals, but that was about it. But we always went to church on Sundays when I was little. And my dad actually stopped going to church when I was, I don't know, teenager. And that was really, really hard for me because I really loved the church. And it was just really sad for me to not have my dad going to church, you know. And I don't know if I thought he was a bad person, but, you know, I knew that he should be going to church, and that's just how I felt. So I was always really sad about that, and I always tried to do the right things and be a good Mormon girl.
Did he tell you why he chose not to go?
No, he never did, and he would always take us. He would drop us off, and he never said anything about it, and I always just figured he didn't like it, which is probably what it was. He would, like, go hiking or something while we were at church, and come pick us up.
Well, he was a single dad. He needed some.
Yeah, that's probably his only time during the week that he had to himself. Yeah, actually.
Doesn't mean he's a bad dad.
Yeah, no, he was a really good dad. So, yeah, he was always there for us. And, like, my whole childhood, that's all he did was take care of us kids. So I could totally see now, you know, that he needed a break, like, take us to church and could go have a break. But I always assumed that he still believed. So it was kind of like I didn't understand really what was going on.
Did you feel, since your mom had passed away, and you're taught that if you keep your covenants, you keep all the commandments, you'll be with your mother again? So was that played in how you felt?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I clung to that like my whole life. Like, just, I'm already going to cry.
That's okay. So,
yeah, like my whole life, I just was so happy that I knew where my mom was, and I knew that I was going to see her again. In my patriarchal blessing, it says that she's, you know, doing missionary work on the other side and all this stuff. And it was really, really comforting to me. So I loved that. And I was just always like so grateful that I had that. And yeah, I always wanted to be good and, do what was right so that we could all be together again. And that was probably a main concern with my dad not going to church. Like, I wanted us all to be together. So that's why that was kind of hard. But yeah, that's that. And I kind of had an interesting high school experience. Like I said, my dad was not very strict. I could go out and do whatever I wanted, stay out as late as I wanted. And he was, okay, you know, okay with it. Or he just wouldn't say anything. I don't know. I had a boyfriend when I was 15, and I knew that I shouldn't, and did stuff that I shouldn't have done. But, you know, I would go to seminary and I would be miserable and know that, like my seminary teacher said, that you should never French kiss. He's like, I never even French kiss my wife. That's disgusting. You should never, you know, it's a sin. And, you know.
And wait.
Even
after he was married?
I know. He said he never French kissed his wife. And we're all like, okay.
That poor wife.
I know. He's like, that's just disgusting. I wonder if he was lying to us or if that's true. I don't know. So I felt really bad even just for doing that. And I felt the whole time I dated this guy, he wasn't a member, and I knew I should break up with him, and I would just be so guilty all the time. Finally, he graduated. He was a couple years older than me, and he went off to the Air Force or something. And so that was good for me because then I was able to let him go. And I didn't even, like, I wanted to break up with him, but I couldn't. I had just, like, I just, like, wanted someone to like me. I don't know.
Sounds like you were a typical teenager.
Yeah, I think it is pretty typical. And girls want boys to like them. And, you know, this boy liked me. And so I don't know. I couldn't break up with him. So it was kind of dumb. After that, things got better. And I actually ended up having two of my boyfriends my senior year turn out to be gay, and that was really hard. Oh, and they were both like really good friends, and then we ended up dating, and then I found out, you know, and then they told me they were gay. So like, it was really hard for me, and I didn't know like how to process that, because to me, you know, what they were doing was a sin, and I wanted to help them. And so I just handled it really, really, really badly. And I had a really bad fight with one of them. And that was like the worst moment in my life.
So were you trying to convince him?
Yeah, you know, and I was like, well, you know, God loves you, but you shouldn't be gay. I don't know what I thought. I don't know what I said to him. I don't remember. But I'm just like so ashamed at how I acted now. But I mean, I was 17 and I just didn't know. Like, that was the only side of it that I'd heard, was that it was a sin, and I, you know, I didn't want my good friends to be sinning, and I wanted them to be happy. You can't be happy unless you're
right,
keeping the commandments and in the church and everything. So that was kind of hard. And then,
were you a seminary graduate?
Yes, I went to seminary all 4 years, and yeah, I was just always like, always went to church, always went to young women's, everything. Though I didn't get my young women's medallion. Because I just didn't, I don't know if it was because I didn't have, like, someone to help me do it. I didn't have a mom there to, like, encourage me and help me. Like, I don't know, my dad didn't care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, I didn't really care about it, and I just didn't, but I was still, like, very into the church, and I always went, and that was my one thing I didn't do. But I didn't worry about it too much.
Well, good. And so you graduated, did you go to college?
Yes, and I went to college, I went down to Dixie to college. Dixie College in St. George, Utah.
Party school.
Yeah, which they say is a party school, but
Utah, that means not really.
It means school. It's a party school because St. George is a fun place to live and it's sunny. I think that's why they call it that. Though maybe for some people it was, but for me, I moved into an apartment complex that was like BYU housing. It had like BYU rules. No bikinis in the pool, no boys after
really
1 o'clock. Like,
so is it like a BYU sponsored?
It's not really BYU. It's not really like part of BYU or anything, but it just has like those standards. Huh. I don't know. I don't know if it's affiliated with the church at all or anything, but I don't know.
Is That's it off question. Campus?
It's off campus, yeah, but just okay. Like a couple blocks from campus. Pretty much everyone in my whole apartment complex went to church and was like, except for my roommates, it seemed like. My roommates just didn't go, and I went with some other friends. I actually feel like going to college, I like really dedicated myself even more to the church, you know, and found friends that were in the church, and I was in the institute choir, and I went to institute, and so totally into it in college, and that's where I met my husband my sophomore year. We were both in the same program, and he was in my ward, so we were just kind of like meant to be together.
Nice.
He was into rock climbing, and I had always wanted to go rock climbing, so he started taking me, and the rest is history.
So what, were you 19, 20?
I was 19, I think, maybe when I met him.
And how long did you date?
We dated for a year, and we broke up so many times, and it was kind of really hard. But then finally, I broke my foot bouldering, actually, and he took care of me, and then we kind of realized that we wanted to be together after that, and he proposed, and so we were married by the time I was 20, we dated for a year. We got married almost exactly a year from when we started dating. And I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty a long time.
Though we only had a 3-month engagement.
Was he a return missionary?
Yes, he was a return missionary, and he taught gospel doctrine in our ward and everything. So he was.
So you were able to check all those little boxes that the typical Mormon girl wants?
Yep, I got everything I wanted. And our wedding was kind of weird because none of his family was there almost. He had one brother there. His parents and one brother were on missions, and his other family was just scattered around the world, so they weren't able to come. So we had one person from his family and a couple aunts maybe. And then I went through the temple the night before with my aunt who I kind of grew up with her and I kind of knew her, but it was still awkward. The whole thing was awkward.
So tell me what you thought of your first temple experience.
I can remember we took the temple prep class, and I remember our teacher talking about, the women veil their faces because, and I don't even remember what he said, but he was explaining it this to me. It was something that I would freak out about. And I was I don't care if we veil our faces, whatever. But I remember going into the temple and we were doing the paperwork and stuff, and I just started crying before anything had even started. And the lady's just this is just such a special day. And I was just I don't know why. Inside I'm just why am I crying? And I didn't feel it was a happy crying or I don't know. It was really weird feeling. I just felt weird. And that was before I even went in.
Did you take that as a warning?
I don't know.
Or you were just confused?
I kind of just thought of it as, I'm getting married and this is a big day and
a stressful cry.
So yeah, it was just maybe stressful. I don't know what it was. It was weird. But yeah, then we went in and I was fine for the rest of it. And I don't know. I really, really wish I could remember how I felt. It's hard to remember. I remember thinking it was weird and a lot different than I thought it would be. And yeah, it was just the whole thing was just awkward and it didn't feel special to me at all, and I was just there with my aunt who I didn't know very well. And my husband kept looking over at me it's okay, everything's okay. So yeah, that was the night before we got married. So I didn't have much time to think about that, the temple and and the crazy thing is that my grandma, my mom's mom, came out from North Carolina to be at my wedding. And here I am, going to the temple while she's here. I didn't see her, at all, because I had to go to the temple and do all that, my endowments and everything. And so I saw her, for a few minutes afterwards, because it was late by the time I got out. And so I saw that, my family for a few minutes, and then I went home. And the next morning, my dad was so sweet. He came and woke me up, I should have been up, but he came and came to give me a hug before I went, which was sweet. And and then I just went by myself to the hair salon and got ready by myself, and I just didn't know anything that was going on. I didn't know how to do anything, or I just didn't have anyone. And So I show up to the temple, I don't know how late. I was totally late for my own wedding. Everyone's there. I'm supposed to get there before the guests, but everyone was already there. And I'm crying because I'm late. And so that didn't start well. And
so you only had the one aunt to go through the temple?
Yeah,
were
and then
friends?
Yeah,
anyone?
I had one friend who had, she was my roommate from the year before, and she came actually to be my escort for my wedding. I don't think she was there for the endowment. I think she was just there for the wedding. I don't really remember. But yeah, so I had two different escorts, one for the endowment and then one for the wedding. And yeah, so I just had, I think I had two aunts there, and that was the only family that I had in the temple at all. My brother was on a mission also, and my dad couldn't go in, and my sisters were too young. So it was like, I show up crying, and then, you know, they like rush me in and hurry and like get all my stuff on and rush in and go get married. Like, it was so fast, and it was just really, I don't know, not a very special day. Though, I mean, it was, because I was happy to be marrying my husband, and that was good. But, and I remember looking at him across the altar, and that was nice too. And I do remember when he says, these angels and these witnesses or something like that. And I just knew that my mom was there. And so that was like really the best part of the day and really nice. So that was good. But, yeah, I wish I could do my wedding over.
Yeah, I know a lot of people, including myself, that feel the same way. There's such conflicting emotions because you're so happy to be married, but at the same time, you're lonely.
Yeah.
There's not many people there.
It was really lonely. Mm-hmm. Which was, you know, the day was about me and my husband, and that was good. And I really felt like that's how it should be, but I kind of wish that my family could have been more part of it. We went out, you know, and there was my grandma who'd come across the country to see me, and I gave her hugs, and we went and had like lunch and a reception and stuff. But I just feel so bad now, like looking back, that, you know, she came out to see me get married, and she wasn't even really a part of it at all. And I hardly even saw her. And then same with my dad. Like, my dad is like the best guy in the world. And, you know, he dedicated his life to raising us kids. And yet he was not worthy to be at his daughter's wedding. I hate that. Sorry.
No, I don't be sorry, because you're expressing emotions a lot of people have and have experienced, and it is sad. It's a sad thing that your people that deserved the most to be there weren't included.
Mm-hmm. And the saddest thing I feel is that I was totally okay with it.
Exactly.
And yeah. I felt like, yeah, he's not worthy to be in the temple, so, you know, I guess he won't be at my wedding. This is where I need to get married. There was no other option. Like, I didn't even think about anything else, any other option. I try to tell myself that it's not really that important, but still frustrates me.
Yeah, and looking back at my own situation, I didn't think of any other options because I didn't even know there were any other options.
Yeah, exactly. That's just like what you hear your whole life. That's like your goal, is to get married in the temple. And so when the day comes, it's like, okay, what do I do? And you just kind of follow what they tell you to do, hoping that it will not always be like that for people in the church. I know there was talk that they were going to, seems like there was like rumors that they were going to announce at conference that they were going to change that policy.
I don't know. There have been people who have been trying to change it, and also in other countries, you do have to get married outside the temple, and then you have your endowments and your sealing.
Yeah, and that's so crazy, and we just don't even realize that it's an option.
Yeah, it's not doctrine, it's a policy, which I think is just, it controls people. That's the only reason it's there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
It doesn't make us feel better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So you were married, which was what the important thing in the very end.
Yep, very important. And I am still totally in love with my husband and so happy that I made that decision to marry him. Like, for both of us, like, our lives improved immensely when we got married. We were just like so much happier.
So after you were married, where did you and your husband live?
We lived in St. George for probably 7 years after we got married, I'm thinking. And so we had our first two children there, just living in an apartment. And that was also like a really having like, especially our first baby, it was really difficult and really lonely because we didn't have any family around. My husband's parents were on another mission, and so they were not around. And I didn't know what I was doing with a baby, so it was really scary. But we figured it out, and, you know, things were good. And I finished school just before I had my first baby, which I'm really glad I did. And it was good. I got my bachelor's degree. But then I had my first baby, like, a couple months after I graduated. So I never really worked. I never really got a job or anything. So I just always had planned on staying at home, and which was good. And I'm really glad we started out that way because we were just really poor. And we got used to it and it was okay. And, you know, things got better and better as my husband got better jobs. And we've just always been able to cope with me not working, which I was really grateful for. I did do like a couple like websites, you know, on the side here and there. And I did wedding videos for a while, which was really fun. But that was kind of just like, I got to do that from home and, you know, I would go out and shoot them, you know, be gone for a couple hours or whatever, but still able to really be able to stay home with my kids, which was really good. And I loved that. Yeah. So we had our first two kids, a little girl and a little boy. And then my husband got laid off at his job in St. George. And we were kind of thinking that there was really nowhere to go in St. George, like nowhere for him to grow his career. And so I called up my dad and asked him if we could move in with him. And he said yes, of course, because like I said, he's the greatest guy in the world. You know, me and my husband and my two kids. So we moved in with my dad and back up here in northern Utah, and had to get used to the cold again. But I loved it, and I could not believe how beautiful the town. The town I grew up in is Heber, and if you've ever been there, it's like the most beautiful little town.
I would move to Heber in a minute, but they don't hire many professional jobs my husband has.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, yeah, it's so beautiful there, and I just was like, how did I not ever realize this? Like, growing up, I didn't realize what a beautiful place I lived in. It was amazing. So we lived there for 2.5 years, and I just loved it, and it was just so beautiful, and it was fun to be back in my home ward. And yeah, it was just really nice. And I really liked living with my dad. I had my next baby. I got pregnant like right after I moved in with him. We moved in with him. So I was like, hey, Dad,
guess what we're doing in your house?
We're going to have a baby too. So, but he was like, that's exciting. That's great. You know, he's like so supportive and so great. And, so that was actually really, really good. I had to have a C-section with her, so it was really nice to be there and like have a little extra help. And actually my grandma came out again from North Carolina a little while after I had her. And, you know, so I had some good support, and that was really, really nice. So that was good times. But then my husband got a job up here in Salt Lake, and he commuted for a year, and it's like an hour commute. And especially in the winter, it's not a fun commute because you have to go over these mountain paths. So, we finally decided that it was time to buy a house. We were going to do what you're supposed to do, buy a house. So we bought a house in Salt Lake, and we love it here, and we're still here. It's been 6 years, and we had another little boy after we moved here. So now we have four kids, and our ward here is actually really, really needy. I don't know if that's a good word. In need of a lot of help. Like it's hard to get people in callings, I guess, and it's a really poor area. So we were really, like, really involved in our ward ever since we moved here, very involved. And, you know, we always went to church and had callings, and I was in the young women's and in the primary presidency and in primary a lot. And then my husband got called as the elders quorum president, which he hated.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like, basically his calling was to like help people move and try to get people to come help people move, and nobody would ever show up to help. And so it was like, he would have to do all the work, and like, you know, he was always willing to help and help out people, but it got to be the point where he was just, I don't know, there was just, he was actually like the executive secretary or something before that. I don't know, the person that you call to set up appointments with the bishop.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And that was really stressful for him too, because there were so many people calling and just needing stuff all the time. And you know, he would have to navigate that. And so even not even being the bishop, but just being the secretary was stressful. In that word, I can't imagine being the bishop. Yeah, anyway, but we, you know, loved our ward and we wanted to help. But it was just getting to where he was starting to think, this is taking a lot of our time, and is this what I want to be doing with my time? Is this really as important as we think it is? And I think maybe that's what got him to start questioning. I don't really know. He would, and the job he got up here actually was for the church, working for the church, which you have to have a temple recommend to work for the church. So anyway, just some background there.
So you have an overwhelmed husband.
So yeah, and he very overwhelmed, and he was, you know, working a lot and, you know, doing his calling and very overwhelmed and just didn't feel like he had any time. And he started getting really depressed, and I didn't know why. And like, you know, he kind of, I just didn't know why he was depressed, and I didn't know what to do to help him. And I, on the other hand, was just like so happy. And I was just like, our life is so great. You know, I love, you know, everything is so wonderful. Yeah. So I was just like, why is he depressed? I didn't understand. And I kind of thought maybe it had to do with his job. His job was really stressing him out. And so he got a new job and
outside of the church.
And so that was good. It seemed like a really good job. And I loved him working for the church because it's like so secure. We all felt so secure, and like, you know, we had good insurance and everything except for didn't cover birth control. But
really?
Other than that,
I didn't
yeah,
know that.
Yeah, no, they don't, they don't cover your birth control.
Interesting.
Yeah. So when he got this new job and I like all of a sudden get birth control for free, I'm like, yes, I love this new job.
The little perks that count.
Yeah. So funny. But, yeah, so we went out to celebrate him getting his new job, and we went to our favorite restaurant.
Oh, no, he pulled the favorite restaurant.
Yeah, the favorite restaurant. And we hadn't even sat down yet. We were, like, sitting at a table waiting to get to our table, and he's, like, so nervous. Like, I'd never seen him this nervous. And he's like, I need to tell you something. And I could tell it was something really bad. He was so nervous. And I was just like, oh my gosh, what is this going to be? You know, like I'm trying to think what it could possibly be. And he said, I think we've been lied to our whole lives. And I was just like, what? What? I didn't even know what to even do. Like, it's funny. I was listening to the podcast a couple weeks ago with the two couples, and she said,
Craig and Melanie and Matheson.
Yeah. One of them, she said, I don't remember which one it was, but she said when her husband told her, she was like, I would have been less shocked if he told me he was cheating on me. And that's exactly how I felt, even though like I would not expect him to cheat on me at all. I would have been totally shocked. But yeah, like that was at least in the realm of possibilities. And like, the church, like, not being true is not in the realm of possibilities. So anyway, he told me that, and I was just like, sit, and so mad. And I was so mad that he told me, like, before a meal at our favorite restaurant, because I couldn't enjoy it.
Okay, men, that's a classic mistake. Do not take your wives to their favorite restaurant to break this news.
Take
them to McDonald's.
Yeah, or like, I don't know, on a hike or something. I don't know. It ended up fine with us, so I guess it's okay. But at the time, I was not happy. And he told me a few other things. He told me that he had, and this also made me really mad, he told me that he had watched the South Park about Mormons, and I was just so mad that he even watched South Park. Like, how could you even watch that show? And especially the one, you know, if they're one doing one about Mormons, how awful. And he was like, it was actually pretty accurate. Except for they showed this, they showed Joseph Smith putting his, you know, looking at a rock in a hat. And I guess he asked someone about that, or I don't know what happened, but he found out that that's really what happened. And I was just like, what? Like, I've never heard this at all. And so I was just mad about several things. And I was just like, stop talking. Let's just go try to enjoy our dinner. And so we went and ate and didn't talk about it again at the restaurant until we got home. And then I think the next thing he told me was that he thought Joseph Smith made it all up. And that was just like over the top. Like, you can't say that about Joseph Smith. You can't say that.
What was your emotion? So, were you angry? Sad?
Oh yeah. I was so angry and just so shocked. I think it was mostly just shock that someone would say that. Like, it was not ever even a possibility. Like, and I remember reading the Book of Mormon, and I would think like, oh, you know, he could have made this up. Like, I remember like that thought coming into my head, but then I'd always be like, oh, but he didn't, you know, of course he didn't, you know, so I never let myself really think that it was actually made up. And even though I think it was there in the back of my mind. So I think when he said that, like, a part of me was kind of like, yeah, he's right. But most of me was just mad, and I was just bawling and crying. And I said, so you're telling me I'm not going to see my mom again? And that was the biggest thing. And that was the first thing I thought of. And he's like, no, I'm not telling you that. I'm just, you know, telling you I'm not, you know, not sure what's going to happen. And, but yeah, so that was the big thing. Like, all of a sudden, I was not sure I was going to see my mom again, where my whole life, like, I was sure, like, I was going to see her again. And even though I don't really have very many memories of her, which I don't know, maybe makes the desire more, because, like, I want to be able to get to know her and, like, stuff like that. And I think that I know at least my youngest sister feels the same way. But yeah, that was the biggest, like, you can't tell me that, you know, like, this has been like a comfort for me my whole life. So I actually like left and like got in the car and just drove. And of course, like, it's kind of like the narrative, like, well, you should get divorced, you know, that pops into my head. And I'm like, no, of course not. I pushed that away. Like, that's not happening. And then, you know, finally, I talked myself into just being okay with it. And, like, I can still be married to him if he doesn't believe in the church. And so I went home and, you know, we just, like, hugged a lot. And that helped. Just, like, keeping that closeness, even though, like, I all of a sudden felt so far away. So I think that's really important. And he was really good about that. Like, he would just come home and hug me, you know. So that was really good. And I think we went to church. So that was on a Friday night. And I think we went to church that Sunday. And he was going to tell the bishop that he was done, that he would need to be released, because he couldn't be Elders Quorum president anymore if he didn't believe, he didn't feel like he could do that. And it turns out, you know, this has been happening for like the last 6 months, his finding stuff out, and that's why he was depressed. And so I was also angry about that.
That he didn't share it,
yeah,
with you.
That he didn't tell me about any of this stuff. So yeah, that's my advice. If you find something out that's bad about the church, you should go right to your spouse and tell them. And not like, I don't know. That was something that I was upset about. But, you know, I know that it just happened, and like, he didn't plan on it happening. But anyway, so we go to church, and he had been texting with the new executive secretary, and he says to me, don't make eye contact with the bishop. One of the speakers didn't show up, and he's going to call someone to come up and bear their testimony. And I was just like, oh, great. You know, so we're sitting there just looking down, just like, please don't call on us. Please don't call on us. And the bishop gets up and he announces that my husband is going to come up and bear his testimony. And I was just like, oh my gosh. So it was so crazy. So he did. He got up, but he didn't say anything. Like, he just said, like, I love my family, and it's been nice to know you guys in this ward or whatever. You know, he said something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, like, really, like, nothing. Nothing really about the church.
So just true feelings and emotions that he
had. Yeah. That's what he was like. This is something that's true. You know, I'm going to go up and say, you know, that I love my family and stuff like that. So that's what he did, and didn't like make a stir or anything. But then he did go tell the bishop after church that he was done. He wasn't, you know, done with church, and that he needed to be released.
I'm just thinking of how that testimony could have gone. I love my family. This church is not true. Joseph Smith is a fraud.
I know. Like, now looking back, Amen. We're like, man, you could have totally said the best testimony. So awesome.
I'm making fun of it, but I'm sure it was.
Yeah, it was really,
really emotional.
It was really scary at the time. Like, whoa, like, you know, you've got to. Because we were still, like, so, like, had always, you know, he hadn't even stopped going to church at all. Like, he'd been Elders Quorum president. This was going to be the first time, like, the week after that was going to be his first time not going to church, like, in his whole life, almost, you know. Like, he'd always gone to church. So I think, you know, it's just so hard to break out of the, I don't know, the break the rules. It's like, there's these rules about bearing your testimony, and you can't break them, or, you know, various things in the church.
How did you feel about him asking for release as high priest?
I thought that it was good. Like, I was still upset. I was still really sad. And, like, I remember sitting in church that day and just thinking, you know, how miserable I was growing up, not having my dad going to church. And I was just like, I don't want to live like that again, and I didn't want my kids to live like that again, or not again for them, but just I didn't want them to have to go through that. And so I was still kind of hoping that he would change his mind, I think, at that point. And the bishop told him to read, I can't remember the scripture, Alma something. It's the scripture where they talk about your faith being like a seed, and the bishop told him to read that. And so he came home and I was like, are you going to read it? And he's like, I've read the Book of Mormon so many times. And he was kind of just like annoyed. And I was so mad. I was like, he's not even going to do it. And I'm like, I'm going to read it. You know, I'm going to read it and pray about it. So I read the chapter, and I was just like, I just remember thinking, well, okay, I know that I can grow my faith back up, because it had kind of like been shaken for me. And that's what I wanted at the time. Like, I wanted to stay in the church, and I wanted it to be true. And I thought, well, I know that I can get myself to believe this again if I do what the scripture says. If I, you know, nourish it like the seed, and like read my scriptures and go to church and do everything they say to do, and everything. And I was like, but if it's not true, do I want to do those things? Do I want to make myself believe? And so then that's kind of what I thought as I was reading it. And so if, you know, if there was any revelation, that's the revelation I got. And so I prayed about it, and I never prayed harder for anything in my life. And I sat there forever waiting for my answer to come, you know, and I was praying so hard, and just like pleading, just, you know, tell me that it's true. Let me know that it's true. And I, even in my patriarchal blessing, it says that I will see angels, you know, and I'm like, this is the time to see an angel. This is important. This is very important. I need to know if this is true. And, nothing. I got nothing. And, I was like, okay. So after that, I just was like, you know, tell me what you know. So I just went, and he told me to go to Mormon Think. And I went to that website and just basically just went through the whole thing. And I was still just like in shock, like all the stuff that I read. And so pretty much like it felt like it was like instantly my testimony was gone, and I just didn't believe it anymore. I couldn't believe how fast it was gone. Yeah, I would kind of take a topic a day and just kind of like, I would read it on Mormon Think, and then I would go look it up in like a bunch of other places, look at their sources and look at everything and make sure it's real, like make sure these were like good sources. And like, amazingly, they were actual sources and real.
Most of them lead back to the church too.
Yeah.
Church
and like, archives. Yeah. And the church, the stuff the church will say. And so, yeah, I was just so angry, but so it was like that week. It seems like it was a week later was New Year's Eve, and we went out for New Year's Eve, and like I tried champagne and like he had a beer, and like, and I still felt like really, really guilty, but it was just really fast, and I had to kind of step back after that. But I would read stuff about the temple, and I would be like, you know, I never liked the temple anyway, and this would explain why it never felt like a spiritual experience to me. Why I just always felt so weird. And
well, it's hard when you spend your whole life building up this testimony, and like you said, and so quickly it's just
yeah,
gone.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how fast it was gone. And I loved the church. I loved it so much. And yeah, and I wanted it to be true because like I wanted to know what was going to happen, and I wanted to know what we're supposed to do, and I wanted to be able to be with my family again. I wanted to know that that's where my mom was, and that I was going to see her again. So just to like have all of a sudden have that taken away from me, like it was really, really, just really hard. And I was. And I think like that weekend or that New Year's Day, I think it was even, so this was like maybe a week or two after I found out, we went to the climbing gym, and that's like my favorite thing to do is go climbing, and I just couldn't even be happy. I couldn't even enjoy it. And, you know, I tried to be happy for the kids and, you know, have fun with them, but I just couldn't be happy. I just couldn't make myself be happy. And I was like that for probably really, really bad for a couple weeks. But then, you know, for a couple months, I was like seriously depressed. Because it was just like.
Did you continue to go to church during that time?
I actually did for a little while because I was just, you know, I loved church so much and all my friends were there. Like all my friends were from the ward. Yeah. And my girls really liked to go to church, and they were 11 and 7. And so I would take them. But then like all this time, you know, for a couple weeks, or I don't even remember how long we went, a month or two, you know, I was still doing research and finding out all this stuff. And then I would go to church, and I would just get so mad because what they were saying wasn't true or wasn't, you know, the whole truth. And I would come home and I would just be so mad and just depressed. I would get so depressed on Sundays, especially because it just wasn't working. Like it wasn't going to work. And I realized, yeah, that I was just getting depressed on Sundays, which is what I was worried about. I knew that if I kept going to church and my husband wasn't, that I would be depressed even before I didn't think the church was not true. But, you know, now that I was like, had serious doubts and didn't think it was true anymore, you know, I was really having a hard time going. And I was worried about what my kids were being taught, because for me, like, I could go and take the good stuff and, like, ignore the bad stuff and ignore the stuff that I knew was not true, but my kids can't do that because they just take everything in and, you know, they want to believe their teachers. Kids are so, they're so believing, like, they want to believe the stuff you tell them. And a couple weeks ago, I was taking my little 3-year-old to the dentist because he had to get some fillings. And we didn't want him to be scared. We were so worried that he would be scared. And so my other kids are talking it up to him, and they said, "You're going to be a robot." You know, they're going to put metal in your mouth and you're going to be a robot. And he was so excited that he was going to be a robot, and he was excited to go in and get his fillings. And I was just, and that just hit me, like, how much how trusting our children are. And like, they will just believe what you tell them. And I wasn't even willing to say, no, George, you're not going to be a robot. Sorry. You know, I was like, yeah, it's going to be so great. So, you know, I don't know. That just kind of hit me that just, man, these poor kids, they are so believing and they will believe whatever you tell them. So anyway, that was my biggest concern with going to church. And I was just started thinking, I don't want them to just be indoctrinated and then be messed up like me when they find out that it's not true. Like, it was so hard for me, and I didn't want them to have to go through that. And I didn't want them to just be learning lies either. So I kind of had decided that I was going to stop going, and I was going to go one more Sunday. And I think maybe the kids even all had decided to stay home that day, and I think maybe I just went. I can't remember. But the bishop spoke in Sunday school, or maybe it was a combined Relief Society priesthood thing or something. Anyway, the bishop spoke in one of our classes. And I was kind of like going into this day, like, you know, give me a sign whether I should stay or, you know, stop going. And so the bishop gets up and he talks about how important it is for us to be in our own ward and, you know, to come every Sunday and to come do our callings. And then he said, there's a lot of people who think it's okay to go spend their Sundays with their family, and that's not okay. You need to be here. And I was just like, no, that's not true. And I realized that that was my, you know, if I was going to get a sign or an answer, that was my answer. And so I just was done after that and didn't go back. Because I was just like, no, that's not true. And my, one of the things that really bothered me, talking to my husband, he said that he always knew growing up, like, his dad was a bishop and stuff, that his family's very into the church. And he always knew that the church was more important than the kids, you know, than the family. Church was more important. And both of us are just like, we don't want that. We don't want that to be how our family is, and we don't want our kids to feel like that at all. You know, he was Elders Quorum president, and our current bishop was Elders Quorum president before he became bishop. And so, you know, we were kind of like on the road to that. And we were just like, we don't want that to be how it is. Our family is what's most important. And so that's when we decided to start doing Sundays as our family day, and we would go spend the day as a family, and usually in the mountains. Because I think the next week we just stayed home because, like, I didn't know what to do when you stay home from church. I never skipped church. So we just stayed home, and I just was so depressed all day, you know. And so then I think the next week we decided to go up to the mountains. And we just went up to the mountains and did, like, a little hike or something with the kids. And it's just, like, so refreshing to me, and, like, it's, like, like, being in the mountains to me is what's like spiritual, and it makes me feel better. So that's kind of become our new church, is to go to the mountains, and we love it. And I look forward to going to the mountains every Sunday. It's been really, really good. So yeah, we started doing that. And then I did have the bishop call me in to talk to him a couple months after that, after I'd stopped going.
Did you have a calling that you needed to be released from?
I was an activity day leader.
Okay.
And so it wasn't like a at-church calling. And I actually kept doing it for a while after I stopped going. Because I was like, yeah, I'm fine to go do activities with the 8-year-olds, you know. And it's fun. And my daughter was in that group. And so we would go do stuff. But then, like, I was never at church, so I wasn't, like, communicating with my partner, and she was pretty much just taking care of it and planning everything, and I would kind of just show up at the time that we usually had it. But then, 1 week came, and she just, like, sent me a text and said, you know, today we're going to go see the Joseph Smith movie over at Temple Square. And And I just couldn't go. I was like, I can't take my daughter to that.
No, we're not.
And I told her, I'm like, I'm having a lot of issues with the history of the church and the way that the church portrays their history. And this is exactly the kind of thing that I'm having problems with. So I am not going to be able to go. And so she just got someone else to go with her. And then I never... Like, I didn't ever ask to be released or anything. I just stopped going after that. And I think she just kind of got my point and just took care of it, which was really nice. I kind of lucked out there. she was really nice about it. She's an awesome lady. And she was like, I really respect you. And I, you know, it's totally fine. And she was really, really nice about it. I love the people in my ward. My friends in my ward have been awesome. And, like, they're still my friends, and they're great. But, yeah, so that's how I kind of got out of my calling.
And the bishop called you in?
Yeah, and the bishop just called me in just to talk to me. Like, he knew that my husband was out or, you know, whatever, having his doubts. And so he just wanted to talk to me about it. And, you know, I was still, like, in that mindset where, like, you know, if the bishop calls you in, you have to go talk to him. When now I'm like, I shouldn't have gone to talk to him. I don't know why I needed to. Like, there's no reason I needed to go talk to him. And or
didn't know it was a choice.
Yeah, like it wasn't a choice not to go talk to the bishop when he calls you in. Or like I should have brought my husband with me. Like there was no reason for me to go talk to him, really. But I did. Like, you know, he's a nice guy and like I was like, yeah, that's fine. I'll just go tell him my problems. But like, I cannot talk about stuff without crying, as you could see. And I just, you know, was like crying in his office and just like trying to tell him, trying to explain to him that, you know, there was a bunch of messed up stuff in the history of the church and I don't believe it anymore. And, you know, he's just like, he was very nice, but the thing he said to me was that his dad didn't go to church growing up, but his mom always did, and that he was so grateful for that. And, you know, just like trying to make me feel guilty. Like, I should be going to church, even if my husband's not, for my children. And I couldn't even tell him, because I was so, like, so I was so emotional, and, like, and it's... But, you know, that's the reason why I decided to leave the church was for my children. Like, so it's like, you're not talking me into this, but you are. But thanks for making me feel bad about it. You know,
sorry, like, I can't live up to your mother.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Did you, because for a long time, I know I felt the guilt. So even though you know you've made the decision that works for you and your family, how was the guilt for you?
Yeah, I did feel guilty for a long time. And I, you know, always like, oh, but what if I'm wrong? You know, what if the church is true? Like, I had that for a long time. Like, oh, but, you know, what if I'm wrong about this? You know, it's really scary to just, like, make your own decision like that. Like, you know, you grow up in the church, you don't really have to make any big decisions for yourself. Like, you know exactly what you're supposed to do to be a good person. You get baptized when you're 8, you know, you go to young women's and you go to seminary and you go to college and institute and you meet your return missionary, get married in the temple. Like, there's not any hard decisions.
And you never
there.
French kiss.
Yeah, no French kissing though. That was my struggle, I guess.
So oh, that's where it all went wrong.
Yeah, I guess that's my problem. Should have listened to my seminary teacher. Yeah, so I don't know. And I always, like, growing up, I like wore tank tops and shorts and stuff a lot. And I know a lot of people, like, their parents won't let them dress like that. But like I said, my dad was really lenient. I never had a problem with it. It was like, you know, it's summer, I'm going to wear a tank top. No big deal. And so that's kind of how I was until I got married. So I always had a really hard time with that. Like, with modesty was where I struggled, I guess. I don't know. And so I had a hard time with that, having to wear garments. And I kind of got, like, really into swimsuits and workout clothes, like, because that's where I could wear what I wanted. I could wear whatever I wanted. It's dumb, but like that was my one time I could choose. But yeah, anyway, so finding out that the temple was made up was like a huge, like, yes, I don't have to wear garments anymore. Like, that was so nice for me. And I still, and that's something that I still like, I'm having a hard time with. Like I will wear a tank top or I'll want to wear a tank top, but then I feel like really, really like self-conscious around my friends who are, you know, still believing. I feel really self-conscious about it. And like, I don't know if I feel guilty, but I don't know. Just like, this shouldn't be what I'm wearing, you know? So it's kind of weird to still have like, still have that guilt. And just like trying to navigate that and like figure out what's actually inappropriate for me to wear. What, you know, what can I actually wear that I couldn't before? That's okay for me to wear.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that that is such a dilemma for myself as well. And then you look at other people that didn't grow up in the church, have nothing to do with the church, and that is not even a thought in their head.
Yeah, they don't even think about it or worry about it. Like, oh, is this appropriate, what I'm wearing? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, and I so, like, I wish that all the time. Like, I wish I could just erase, like, all this stuff in my brain that makes me, you know, think these things and just see it from a clear perspective. Like, what would someone who didn't grow up in the church, you know, or if I hadn't grown up in the church, what would I want to wear right now? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. So it's hard to know. It's kind of weird.
How long has it been since you stopped going to church?
So it's been about a year and a half. Okay. And it's still really, really hard. Like, I have my ups and downs. Like, sometimes I'm totally fine. Then, like, general conference comes, or, like, you know, I get in a fight on Facebook with somebody about something, and I don't know. It's, I'm trying to figure out how to just, like, just live and just be normal and not, it's really hard for me not to bring up the church. Like, it's just, I just feel like I need to let everybody know the stuff I found out, but people don't want to know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, it's really, really frustrating for me. Like, how can you not want to know? And I have a really hard time understanding this and like respecting that and just like being okay with that. When I told my sister, so I told her that we are not going to church anymore, probably like 5 months after we stopped going, because I knew I needed to tell her because she was starting to get serious with this guy that she was dating. And I wanted to kind of warn her that maybe I wouldn't be able to be at her wedding. And that was like awful, having to tell her, because she, you know, reacted like I reacted and was very upset. And it was really hard, and I don't feel like our relationship is the same still, and it's been almost a year, because, you know, she's just like, I don't know you anymore, and I used to look up to you, and stuff like that, and it's just so hard. And turns out that, you know, my temple recommend was going to be good, you know, still valid or whatever, till after her wedding. So I was able to go to her wedding, but it was not... It was not nice, a nice experience. I promised her like the month before that I would go to church again, you know, and do everything that I needed to do. I put my garments back on and I was like a good Mormon again for a month before her wedding, so that I just wouldn't feel weird being in the temple. And that was really awful, because again, I would go to church and then I would come home and be depressed and angry and stuff. And I just, you know, couldn't wait till it was over. And I went to her wedding, and we had kind of talked about me being her escort, but then I didn't go to her endowment session because I just couldn't bring myself to go and like be someone sitting there acting like it was normal. I just couldn't do that. Because I know for me, like, you go to the temple and you look around, like, this is crazy. And you look around and everyone's acting like it's totally normal. So you're like, well, I guess it must be normal. I guess it must be okay. And I was just like, I am not going to be one of those people telling her that it's okay in the temple. So, yeah, so that's why I ended up just not, I didn't go through the temple with her, but I did go to her wedding. But my stepmom, my dad, had remarried about 5 years ago, four years ago. So she was there, and I was there, and so we all kind of went in together, and the lady, you know, working in the temple was like, oh, she can only have one escort. She can only have one person with her. And I was just like so mad. Like, now I wish I would have just stood up for myself and said, this is my sister's wedding day. I'm going to be with her. You know, I'm going to be there for her. But I said, okay. And like, she stood there like looking at both of us, not knowing what to do, you know? And so I said, okay, I'll just see you later. And I just left. And I was starting to cry, of course, and so mad. And I went and sat in the little room, the little waiting room in the temple, just fuming and not keeping it in too much how dumb I thought that was. And, you know, everyone's like, there was a bunch of people sitting in there. And I was just like, that's so dumb that she can't have who she wants with her on her wedding day. And just mad. And I feel bad that I reacted that way because, you know, made her feel bad on her wedding day. And just, it was just messed up. But,
Well, when you no longer believe, it just starts to not make sense.
Yeah, and it was just like, that's just dumb.
And it even takes on a creepy factor mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, I'm not too much older than her. I'm only 4 years older than her. But like, growing up without a mom, like, I was like the only...
You're the big sister.
...mother figure, you know, that she had. I was like her... I don't know. And she even told me that. And so I was like, you know, okay, I'm going to be there for you on your wedding day. And then, you know, we go in. And of course, you know, they just look at my stepmom thinking that she's the mom and she's the one that should be doing it, you know. And I didn't want to, like, tell her that she shouldn't do it, you know, either. And it was nice that she was there for her, and that was great. But, like, I just, you know, I just was like, she shouldn't have to choose that on her wedding day. She shouldn't have to go through that. And I was mad about that. And then we went into the wedding ceremony, and I was just, tried to just smile and be happy about it, but it wasn't very special. I didn't feel like, I felt like we were sitting in Sunday school. Like, he was giving us a lesson. The sealer, like, stood there and talked to us for half an hour and talked to us about the church and how important the church is and all this stuff. And I was like, I felt like that was a lesson. I didn't feel like that was a wedding. But she was still married, and it was still a happy day after that. So it was good. And I'm glad I was able to be there, but I'm happy to say I'll never go back. I'm totally fine with not ever going back to the temple. I was not happy about that.
You mentioned your children. How did they take the news that you were no longer going?
Oh, they took it really well. I mean, our youngest really liked nursery. So, like, he wanted to go to nursery, but, you know, he doesn't understand, so we just stopped going. Like, we took him, like, one more time. And it was just easier not to take him anyway when we would go, when I would go with my girls. My other son didn't ever like church, so he was totally fine with it. And my, though I think it stresses him out when we talk about it. Like, I think, I don't really know what he thinks, but I do think it does stress him out a little bit, but that he's happy not to go also. And then my girls, it was a little bit harder. My oldest, so she was 10 or 11, and we just told her that we weren't going to be going to church anymore, or I guess that was, we just told her dad wasn't going to be going to church anymore, and she did cry. And we didn't tell her a lot, like, right away. Like, we kind of would just mention things here and there. Like, I don't know. We tried not to, like, filter what we were talking about around them. So, like, they would hear us talking about the church because we were talking about it a lot. So kind of they would hear stuff, I think, from us. And you know, and I remember one day I went down and, you know, was tucking my daughter in at night, and I asked her how she felt about it and if she was okay with it. And, you know, and we ask them still every once in a while how they feel about it, and they're fine with it. And, the one time I did go down to talk to her, and I can't remember, I had been watching a YouTube video about cults, and she asked me what I was watching or something, and I said, oh, it's just a documentary about cults. And she's like, why are you watching something about baby horses? And I was like, oh, no, not baby horses. And so I kind of tried to explain to her what a cult was. And she's like, why are you interested in that? And I said, well, I kind of feel like some of the stuff about the church is kind of like a cult. And I said, like, for example, when you go on a mission, you're not allowed to call your family at all or anything. There's a lot of things about missions that are very culty. And she said, she was like, really? Like, she couldn't believe that you weren't allowed to call your family when you're on your mission. And I was like, yeah, that's just how it is. And she's like, but I thought family was the most important thing. And I was like, yeah, exactly. So I think, like, she has worked it out for herself that the church doesn't make sense, and that, and so she's happy not to be going. And we just have our fun days on Sunday, and it's been really, really nice and really just a good day for it to be together as a family and go do something. It's kind of brought us together and made us stronger, I feel like, instead of like going to church and all separating off into our separate classes and then coming home and like taking naps or whatever. Like Sunday wasn't really like a day to like bond together, I didn't feel like, and now it is. And so I love that.
But what about family like home evening? You know, you're supposed to do it's a commandment to teach your family.
Yeah, and they do still, like, can we do family night? Like, they really like to do family night. So now we're kind of like, well, you know, Sunday is kind of our family day. We have the whole day, you know, for our family. But, like, they sometimes will just want to play, like, a game or something, like a board game, because that's what we would usually do for family home evening. We would do, you know, a lesson and then, like, have a game. We'd play a game. So that's what they see as family night, is playing like memory or something.
Okay. I was going to say, you have the only kids that want family home evening.
So that's what they say. Like, can we do family night tonight? And that's what they mean. Like, can we play a game together? Okay. And so we still try to do that. And we do like to do that. So we still do it. I mean, we don't do it like, okay, it's Monday night. We're going to do actually, we didn't do family night on Mondays anyway, because my oldest daughter is in ballet like almost every day, and so she's gone on Monday nights, so we didn't do it. We were doing them Sunday nights anyway, so it just kind of went from Sunday to being our family night to Sunday being our whole family day. So sometimes we'll do games or something in the evening, and that will be our family night. But I did like having like a family discussion, like sitting down together and kind of having a discussion, you know, talking about like how we feel about stuff, and then like having a little activity to do together. So we kind of still do that, but it's not like a strict thing either. So that's kind of fun. Oh, that was one thing I wanted to talk about also, because my daughter is in ballet 5 days a week. She has Wednesdays and Sundays off. And she's like really aspiring, you know, to be like a professional ballerina, like, and she's really good. And I just love that I can totally just encourage her now and let her go with that dream and do that. And I think I was just thinking about like once she got into Young Women's, I know she would start like feeling, oh, I shouldn't have ballet on Tuesday nights because I should be going to Young Women's, you know, and stuff like that. And like getting like these pressures like, oh, well, you know, ballet might be fun, but that's not something, you know, to really strive for. You know, you need to strive for being a mother, getting married and being a mother. And like, that's fine if she wants to do that. But like, if she wants to go after being a ballerina, then I think that she should totally be able to do that. And I'm so glad that I don't have to be like torn. Like, I was kind of conflicted like about that. Like, should I be, you know, taking her to ballet this much? And should I be like encouraging her this much when, you know, and
No, yeah, I've wondered about that myself. I wonder who I would have been if I didn't have any of the restrictions I grew up with.
Yeah.
I mean, you're told you can be anything you want, which is true, but in the Mormon culture, you can be anything you want after you do all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you have time, maybe you can do that.
Yeah, it's like as long as it fits in with being a wife and a mother, then you can do it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, I remember, like, I wanted to be like, an ice skater at one point, you know, be like a professional ice skater, which, you know, was ridiculous because we didn't even have like a skating rink in our town or anything. I had no training, but you know, I kind of wanted to be that for a while. And then, you know, I started thinking, but you know, that kind of lifestyle doesn't really fit in with the church. And neither, and like, same with being like a pro rock climber. Like I had looked, I met a pro, this girl, pro rock climber once, and I was just like, that would be so awesome, you know, but it doesn't fit in. Like they go climbing on Sundays, and like it just doesn't fit in with the lifestyle. And so it was not ever something that I really like thought like that I could do.
You're a marathon runner. Has that taken on a new life after?
Yeah, it kind of has, because it's kind of funny because I actually did an Ironman 5 years ago, and it was like the most awesome day. Like I loved it so much, but it was on a Sunday, and I was like conflicted about that. Like how could, you know I shouldn't have done this on a Sunday, and I wasn't keeping the Sabbath day holy, but how could it have been such a fulfilling, wonderful experience if it wasn't going to church on Sunday? And I was really kind of conflicted about that. And I told myself afterwards, okay, I'm not doing any more races on Sundays. And usually races in Utah are on Saturdays, so it's not a problem. But this one was out of state. So I was like, you know, I'll just stick to Utah races and do them on Saturdays. And then, you know, I won't have to do that again. I kind of had told myself that. But, so it's kind of nice now because we have our day on Sunday to spend together as a family, then I don't feel like quite so bad taking Saturday to train. I mean, I still don't want to take like the whole day, but I feel a little bit more like I can take a little time for myself to go, you know, go running for a couple hours or whatever. So I think that has changed a little bit and helped me, like, I don't know, it just kind of makes more sense now, like, because running has always been such like a wonderful thing for me. Like it like helps relieve stress, and it's almost like a spiritual experience for me sometimes. Like just like the empowerment and like knowing that you can do these things. So I don't know, and it actually really helped me with leaving the church, because I needed something to do, like, and I needed a community still. And so I was really glad that I had that running community to kind of just still have something. And I know some people, like, the church is their whole life, and like, how can you leave that when you have nothing else to turn to? So I was really glad that I had that. And the same for Mindy, like, she can go to ballet all day on Saturday, but then we know that we're going to have Sunday to spend with her and do stuff. And so we don't have to feel so bad that we're letting her take her, you know, the whole day Saturday to go to work on, you know, her passion and her dream. And I think it's great that she's so dedicated. Wish I was like that when I was 11. It's like amazing. She's really amazing.
That's awesome.
So,
well, I appreciate you doing this. I did want to ask you, since there aren't many Mormon listeners that listen to this podcast, or active Mormons, I should say, what would you tell your friends that are still going to church and still strongly believe? What would you tell them about yourself and your new position in life?
Well, I just feel like there's so much like bad stuff in the church, and so many lies, and so many people being hurt, that I just don't feel like it's worth the good that's there. I think that you can find the good in other places. And I've also I don't know, kind of where I'm at right now is I just feel like nobody knows anything, and that's okay. You just need to be okay with that, with the fact that we don't know what's going to happen after we die. Like, you know, maybe I'll see my mom again, maybe I won't, but that's okay that I don't know exactly what's going to happen. And I think that's why religion is so comforting, because it's just like, we want someone to hold our hand and tell us, look, everything's going to be okay. Your mom's just doing missionary work in the other world, you know, in the next world. And she's, you know, just happy and great. And, you know, you'll see her again. You know, we all want that. We want to hear that. But just because we want that doesn't mean it's true. That doesn't mean that's what's going to happen. And it doesn't mean that we should base our lives on what these people who said this nice thing tell us to do, because really they don't know anything either. And yeah, that's a nice idea that we'll be with our families again, but you know, do you really think we need to go do all this stuff in the temple to make that possible? Do you think that we need to dress a certain way and like do certain things, not drink coffee? Like, it just seems so silly to me now, like the things that we placed importance on. What makes you a good person? Like, I'm a good person if I go to the temple and I pay my tithing and I, you know, don't drink coffee or alcohol or smoke or anything. That's what makes me a good person. And it's really nice to just like have that, I don't know, measuring stick, I guess. So you can see, like, you can, like, check off all the things you've done right, and so you're a good person. I just see now that that's not true at all, and that's not what makes a person a good person. And I think it's more important to work on just loving people and, you know, doing our part to make the world a better place. I think it's also really important to try to, like, get as many experiences as possible. I noticed that that in our conversations, the things that we tend to talk about are our experiences. Like, oh, tell me about your weekend. What did you do? Or, like, let me tell you about our trip to whatever. You know, we just, like, thrive on experiences and hearing other people's experiences. And we, when we experience things with other people, that's how we grow closer to people. And, you know, just having that shared experience. So I kind of, I don't know, I just thought that was interesting. I just really feel like the more experiences we can get, the more we know and the more we can empathize with other people and just understand what's going on in the world. And so I think that's really important.
Well, thank you, Colleen. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, and thank you again for listening to Mormon Expression Voices. If you would like to be a guest on our podcast, we'd love to hear from you. You can email me at voices@mormonexpression.com, and you can also go to our website, mormonexpression.com. Thanks. Bye.